We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
You're listening to From the Chair, and I'm your host, Mike Hamilton. Join us each episode as we talk to athletic directors from across America. We're going to talk about topics like leadership, career development, issues of the day, and I can promise you we're going to have some fun along the way, too. So sit back, listen in, and let's dive in. Let's go.
All right. Great to be back for another episode. My guest today is a longtime friend and someone who is no stranger to this industry, and that's the Vice President and Director of Intercollegiate Athletics at Memphis, Laird Veach. Laird, thanks for being with us today.
Happy to be here, Mike. Good to see you again, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, let's just get rolling. I was thinking this morning as I was looking at my notes for our conversation and just thinking about the industry in general, there's so much going on today, right? And I'm curious, you know, we're in November, so what is that, 4 or 5 months into a new fiscal year? Fans are back in the stands, that kind of thing. Talk to me just a little bit about what you're seeing at Memphis in terms of COVID recovery. And I don't necessarily mean the intricacies of your finances or anything like that necessarily, just what you're experiencing with fan behavior and how that's going as we come out of what's been a crazy 18 months.
Yeah, you know, I'd say it's just now really starting to feel like we are truly getting back to normal. I'd say we're not, you know, quite there, but it feels much more so than it did even, you know, a month or two ago. Beginning of the season, we were still kind of feeling our way. I do think it's impacted some of our attendance. One of the things that surprised me a little bit is, you know, with as, you know, promising and high profile and as a big a deal as men's basketball is here in Memphis, we have seen a little bit of impact on sales for men's basketball than what I thought we might. And I think part of that has been that, there is a requirement for either vaccine or, proof of test as you enter into the FedEx Forum. So that's some of it. But I think there's still a little hesitancy on the part of some. But really, I'd say over the last handful of weeks, it's starting to shift back to normalcy.
You know, anecdotally, your notion about the vaccine requirement or negative test to come into the forum, here in Nashville, and by the way, just for the record, this will be running pretty soon, but we're recording on November the 4th. So I say that only because of what I'm getting ready to say. We've had that requirement for Predators games in the NHL team here in Nashville, and they just changed that for their next home game, which is November the 13th. But in looking back, two games ago when the Preds were playing the Sharks, They broke their 192 game sold out streak for the first time. And, you know, what is that? Preds, you know, the NHL, they play 40 something games a year. So 4 or 5 years. And the notion has been that the requirement for the vaccine or negative test enter may have perhaps affected that. So I'm interested to see as they now move to this next phase where you're not required to have a vaccine anymore, if a new sellout streak will start, right? Yeah. So I know that's that will evolve at your place like it will at other places around the country, and there are different protocols. Let me ask you this, from a just functionally speaking, from how you guys as an athletic department, your behavior locally there during the middle of the pandemic and now, and we've done these calls that we're on right now, Zoom calls or whatever, do you uh-huh. see some permanent takeaways from the COVID environment that you feel like, okay, we learned some lessons here and that's probably a pretty good idea. Let's keep doing that.
Yeah, I think it's probably not too dissimilar to what most places have learned. You know, for us, it's certainly been the digital ticketing and, you know, moving a lot of that forward quickly. It accelerated that process for us a great deal, and that's been a big benefit. And I think part of it too, I would say operationally, just in terms of control and limiting access to the fields at the court, you know, those types of areas. I think some of that'll carry over more. So more just access and availability from a fan standpoint on one end, but also kind of controls, operational controls around the playing environment. Those are the two things that really stick out the most in terms of things that I think will carry over.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, let's shift to another hot topic for today's world. And that's this conference realignment piece that we've all been experiencing over the last several months. You sit in an interesting place. I mean, you're at a great school with great history. You're in a community that's got incredible corporate support. You've had a success nationally, particularly in basketball, and you know, in a city that's got some population and in a region that's got some ability to get different places. Uh-huh. I know Memphis has been mentioned from time to time as maybe moving on to other leagues or whatever, but for now you're stationary in the American, and you've seen some of your teams move to other leagues, and then you also have acquired other teams getting ready to move into your other league, into your league. So I think you've got the ability to speak to this maybe in a unique way, and uh-huh. you know, I couple that with just your long time in the industry. So I'm curious as to your thoughts on where this is today. You know, is it mostly done now, or do you think there's more to come? Just your thoughts from your chair.
Yeah, you know, being at Memphis has been a really interesting spot to be in, to sort of, you know, observe on one hand, but be a part of these processes over the last several weeks. I sort of look at being on, kind of look at us right on the edge in many respects, and on both sides of the table, if you will. So it creates some challenges, but also some opportunities that other schools may not have one way or the other. You know, I do think it's going to continue in one way, shape, or form. This sort of initial round here that was, you know, that was generated by the Texas and Oklahoma move, I think is starting to settle down, but you know, my guess is there'll be more here in the not too distant future. Just it's sort of the nature of things, right? I mean, that's one of the consistencies in college athletics, is that conference realignment has always been here, and it just seems like we're at such a time of instability and change in our world on multiple fronts that I would anticipate there will likely be more. It may not be in the next few months, but within the next few years. You know, for us, it's it has been a challenge because, you know, there is such a desire to elevate, right? And I've been very clear about that. I think everybody recognizes it and is comfortable with the fact that if we have an opportunity to improve ourselves and better our position, we're gonna do that. I've been proud of our fan base and sort of how they've reacted. You know, I was really concerned at first when we were not part of that Big 12 expansion, that how our people would react. And you know, for the most part, while they're certainly disappointed, our fans recognize that, you know, there's still hope and there's still opportunity ahead, and it's really driven a sort of a desire to want us to continue to invest and do the right things. And then, you know, from an American standpoint, It immediately flipped. So I was on the side of all one of the ADs that was calling all the other ADs and trying to, you know, understand what's really going on behind the scenes back there. And then, you know, literally like the next week, it flipped over and I'm getting calls from all, you know, my old friends across the country that may want to be in our league. And so it was really interesting. And as you know, those processes move very fast, right? That's what's sort of strange about it is we have these massive institutions that move really quick on these big decisions. But I was really pleased with where we landed. You know, I pushed from the beginning for our conference to think about getting bigger and not just, you know, filling in, you know, a couple three that we lost, but let's think about expanding larger than that, because I think it's important from a stability standpoint. I think it's important from a television and value positioning standpoint in the future, not only in markets, but also in overall content. And so it just seemed like the right sort of business move to make. And we ended up, I think we've ended up in a really good, good place here, and we'll start the transition.
You know, while the schools that exited do have, they're taking good markets with them. The reality is you guys, you know, you replace that plus more probably with who you're adding, right? Which is probably helpful in the long run,
right? And, you know, part of it was a play for the state of Texas, because that's such an impactful piece, and making sure we're stabilizing there. But then we went back to the sort of model of the American from the beginning has been, you know, bigger schools, big markets, growth markets that you feel like there are places where they will continue to elevate. And you want to know that there's a commitment to athletics, so that the institutions are going to continue to invest. And, you know, I think all those match up well.
You know, hey, so by the way, I'm getting ready to ask you a question I didn't sort of let you know I was going to ask, but it's come to me as we're talking here. You know, as it relates to this conversation we're having right now and some of the controversy around the release of the CFP standings and that kind of thing, do you believe that the bias towards Power Five schools, or let's call them traditionally successful football schools, is real? And does the expansion of the CFP mitigate that? Or what else needs to happen to make sure that the CFP continues to be, you know, what we all need it to be? And that's a very viable solution to determining a national champion.
Mm-hmm. You know, I do think there's real bias. I think that's just sort of natural human tendency, right? And I come at it from a place. So I was at, you know, Kansas State for several years, and then at a Florida, and now here. So I think I have, you know, I've seen it from several different angles. And it's certainly difficult for a Memphis or a Cincinnati to break through. I mean, that is obvious based on the way things are structured now, which is one of the big reasons why I do feel like it should expand, and not just because of creates opportunities for schools like ours, but because I think it's truly healthy for college football, and it allows an interest from more people, right? And that in the end, that's in terms of, you think about the long-term viability of, if you look at college football as a product that we're selling to fans, whether that's, you know, from a viewership standpoint or attending games or what have you, the more people in this country that are truly engaged and that are care and involved, the better for the long-term viability of college football. So it needs to expand. And, you know, whatever model that is, I mean, to me, the 12 team seems to make the most sense. That's a decision that is going to be made by others, but I think it needs to be made, and we need to not drag it out.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple more questions about Memphis, and then I want to talk a little bit about your career and some learnings from that. You know, you play in two venues specifically in your biggest revenue driving sports that are off campus. The Liberty Bowl, which I believe is getting ready to undertake a little bit of a different name, but, you know, an iconic structure that's been there for a long time. Everybody knows it. And then, of course, the FedEx Forum, the home of the Grizzlies and the Memphis Tigers. You know, talk a little bit about, there's some goodness in that, right, as to why Memphis has been aligned with those venues. And then maybe, you know, I know there's probably a little difficulty too. Maybe it's because of student attendance or whatever. Just curious as to your thoughts. You know, that's not, you know, given the schools that you've worked at previously, that was a new thing for you to experience. So your thoughts on that.
Yeah, very much. And it is truly a good and bad, right? That's there's some real positives to it. And, you know, I think about it, you know, particularly from a men's basketball standpoint, and being able to play in an NBA arena that is, you know, situated right on Beale Street, and the quality, the size, the presentation, the experience for our fan base is really high. But it also really fits with our brand and what you know, Penny is building here with you know, basically a development program for NBA superstars, and being able to play in an NBA arena is really fits that well. And I think our people enjoy that because of the type of experience it provides and the location, you know, being able to be there as part of the kind of city look and feel in Beale Street downtown. It's just, that's the type of environment that I think really fits us. And you know, on the football side, there's real benefits as well, because you know, you're in an area that is, you know, it's got a lot of parking, it's got a lot of space around it. The city has been willing to invest in some things like Tiger Lane. For those who haven't been here, our tailgate scene is pretty remarkable. It's one of the best I've really seen, because of the setup and the space and the areas around it. And you know, having another partner like the city at the table can be beneficial, right? You have somebody else that's willing to invest and that cares and is involved. But the downside is it's a lack of control, right? You don't always determine your own destiny, particularly when it comes to how you service your fans and the type of experience you provide them on game day. You know, being an old development guy that is, you know, used to trying to really take care of people and manage their experience, but also the operational experience I had at Florida and others, you tend to want to be able to make sure that you can hire the ticket taker or the, you know, person directing traffic, or, you know, and having control and influence over all that is good, because you have the ability to make sure it you hold people accountable to it. But here it's challenging because we just don't have that same level of control. So there is good and bad. I think there's a lot of opportunity, particularly as we look at the Liberty Bowl. We are partnering alongside the city to look at a plan on how we can invest in that and really elevate it, because it has really good bones, a good structure, but it needs a facelift in a pretty dramatic way. So hopefully we'll be able to partner with them to make that happen.
Well, and I know through your Memphis Rising initiative, you're investing a ton of money in new or renovated facilities on campus too, right, with some of your other sports. And so you've got these two great facilities in football and basketball, and then now you're investing, let's call it at home, right there on campus, and a number of other facilities. If I recall, it's like soccer and baseball, and maybe is it track? I don't know the other sports, but I know you're doing some investing on campus.
Yeah. One of the great things about this place that I didn't really recognize until I got here is that we have essentially the footprint for a student athlete village, which is, as you know, is a trend across the country. Everybody's kind of shooting for that type of experience, and they've done a really good job prior to my arrival of investing in some key areas, particularly for football and basketball. But there's some upkeep that needs to take place with baseball, with track, soccer, with some other things. But our next big initiative is going to be pushing forward a housing development that, you know, we will of course have 49% of right there on our Park Avenue campus. And then right across the street from that, we're going to build a student athlete success center. So it'll house, you know, dining and academics and all the things that impact student athletes on a regular basis, as well as our department staff. So we can all be there together. So it's going to create a really nice footprint where the day-to-day lives of our student athletes are all going to be in one spot, which is kind of the goal, right? So, yeah, I'm excited about that, and I think there's a ton of potential, and it's stuff people really get excited about investing in because it impacts student athletes so directly.
Yeah. Well, let's flip to your career for just a second. You've worked at a number of great institutions, and one of the things that is candidly a little unique for a current sitting athletic director is your time at Learfield. I'm celebrating my third-year anniversary at Learfield. And I know that you worked for the company for 7 years, I believe, seven-ish years, and served as a GM and a regional vice president during a time of significant growth for the company. And I'm curious, because I've seen learnings myself from having been in the chair as an athletic director and now in the MMR business, some gaps that I've seen between what ADs understand about the MMR business and vice versa. You now have had the opportunity to be in both of those places and in your case, were in the MMR business for quite some time, really. What do you take from that? It helps you, you know, I know you've got all the development experience as well, by the way, but I want to focus in just for a minute on the MMR piece of your background. What has been helpful in coming through that particular point in your career to what you're doing today, or informative to your career today?
Yeah, you know, I've told many folks that, you know, for me, I think that's one of the sort of unique advantages, and it's more of an advantage than I ever had anticipated. You know, I took the job thinking, going to Learfield, thinking that that was going to be my career path, right? It wasn't about trying to lead to this position. It was, I really liked and respected the leadership of the company. I liked the idea of really focusing on the business of sports, and you know, just being in the corporate environment, but you'll still having kind of a one foot in the athletic scene as well, the college athletic scene. So it's been a really, it was really a healthy experience for me, and it really comes down to perspective, right? It allowed me to see things from, you know, not only just directly the MMR piece, but more of a global scale within college athletics. And as you know, and in your role, you end up touching a lot of different schools, and you see things it's kind of, you know, like thin slicing. You just kind of get a view of their department, but you get a pretty interesting perspective of it. And had seeing several schools like that has been really helpful. And also just being able to see it from a business perspective and managing, you know, a true kind of bottom line oriented, organization, you have a different perspective than what you traditionally do in an athletic department. So that's been really helpful, but it also has given me some direct perspective on how, you know, media partners really look at things, And you know, I remember being in your type of chair, and I would always challenge the folks in this chair to think about you know, Learfield and that property as if you were managing yourself, and what decision would you make? So if it was in house, what would it look like in terms of this decision or that decision? So it allows me to kind of really see that, and it also, I think, it allows me to look at things from your perspective and you know, try to be a good partner, because I know what you really need. It's been really healthy, and I look back and I'm very thankful for that experience.
You know, one of the things I've tried to help our internal team see is just an athletic director has so many different constituent groups that you're having to sort of manage, and those constituent groups so many times are not in alignment, and the politics involved in that are very complicated. And I think sometimes on our MMR side of things, we don't necessarily see that or understand it at the greatest level. And the counter to that is, from an AD chair, I think we've made it really comfortable over time that, you know, the historical precedent has been guaranteed rights fee checks. And so, you know, a lot of times ADs have accepted the check without diving in deeper to say, you know, what does this all mean, and how can we be more informative to the process, more engaged in the process? Because, but in most schools, Larry, as you know this, it's a, I don't know, 7 to 10 to 15% line item of your revenue at many places. And we need to do a better job on the MMR front of helping athletic directors, you know, keep them informed, but also pulling them into the process to understand, if we unlock these certain things, then we can push your revenue to a different level, and we can also expand your brand in the marketplace in a different way. So, you know, you and I have got more that we ought to talk about at some point on that front, for sure.
I'm sure there's a lot.
Yeah. Hey, so you played for Bill Snyder, and you mentioned being at Kansas State. You're a Manhattan, Kansas native. You were a two-time academic All-American at Kansas State, I think a four-time Big Eight academic winner. And you were there in what I would still call the early success years of the Bill Snyder regime, right? But you grew up in the town, so you really saw the evolution of Kansas State football. And for a lot of folks who are, let's call them youngsters today, may not understand. I remember at one time, you know, K-State and you know, Wake, I mean, they were struggling in terms of where they were and win percentage, historically speaking. Now, let's give credit to Kansas State for what's been accomplished over the last 20 plus years. And much of that goes to Bill Snyder and the support that he had around him and the players that played for him, like yourself. Mm-hmm. I'm first curious as to your take on your view of seeing the evolution of Kansas State football at living there, but more specifically, what it meant to play for Bill Snyder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, you know, I was very blessed, you know, so many things in life are about, you know, timing and opportunity. And, you know, when Coach Snyder got there in 89, so I was part of the first kind of true recruiting class. He had a small recruiting class before he got there in 89, but it was, you know, he was only there for a couple, 3 months before it all hit. At that point in 89, he was 1-10. And so we didn't really know what we were getting, right? So I kind of jumped in with, you know, Kirby Hokut and many others that really didn't know fully what we were jumping into. So it was a remarkable experience from a timing standpoint to be, you know, to grow up there, be a local kid and be a part of that transition. You know, but people always ask me, so what was it like to play for Bill Snyder and what did you do what did y'all do to make that happen? And I tell people it was really, really hard. It was a lot of work and it was in a different era, right? Coach Snyder's an old school coach, very discipline oriented, very much outwork, everybody. It was before, you know, the 20 hour rule and all the limits we got now. So, it was challenging, but it was also extremely rewarding. And, you know, to be able to be a part of a transition of a culture like that was really, really poor in a lot of respects, one that just, you know, expected excellence and really, you know, expected to improve every day, right? That type of mindset shift was dramatic and learned a lot from that in terms of kind of life lessons on, you know, how to manage people, how to continue to just get up every day and get after it. It was a very rewarding experience in a lot of respects.
Yeah. Well, hey, so, you know, when I know you worked with John Curry for a long time and, we both share, a friendship with John. And when John left, you were deputy AD and then named interim AD. And as fate would have it, you didn't end up getting the AD job. And, you know, I believe there's plans for everybody's life and your plan has played out and you're the athletic director of Memphis and you've got a great gig and it's going well. But, you know, one of the things that I've done these podcasts, I've talked to now a few folks who have had and held interim AD titles, and in many cases, you don't get the job. Sometimes you do get the job. But in your situation there, particularly having gone to school there and had the success you had from a football perspective, what would you say the learning lessons were for you as a part of that process that have now made you into, you know, or have informed who you are today, not only maybe as a person, not as an AD, but as a person?
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think when you the lessons in life are the hardest lessons are the best lessons in many respects. You know, you build up a scar tissue and an ability to manage things that you wouldn't be able to otherwise if you didn't go through those. But it was challenging. I've shared with many people that was one of the most emotional and difficult things to go through because I wanted it so bad, right? But, you know, as you and I both know, Mike, we both share faith and having faith in that process was critical. And frankly, I don't know how you go through and maintain perspective on something like that without it. And I will tell you, I immediately, when that did not happen, I immediately knew that there was another path for me. Like you said, there's a plan and God had a plan. And that door quickly opened. Thankfully, maybe I think it was even the next week, Scott Strickland called me and asked me if I'd be interested in coming down to Florida. And that suddenly sounded pretty cool to go to Florida and work with Scott and the great people there. So it was hard, but I did learn that you really can't put so much of your identity and sense of success in just getting or keeping a job, right? It has to be about more than that. And that's where I found sort of after the fact through perspective that, you know, one of the things I think one of the reasons I did not get that potentially is because I wanted it so much and I wanted it so much for me, right? And it's okay to want a job because you want that position and you want, you know, the rewards of that job and the compensation or the fun parts about those positions. But it also has to be something more than that. And it has to be a place, like, one of the things I love about this place is it's something that I think I can really have an impact on, right? I can really help help here. And the things that I've learned and the experiences I've had over the years can be applied here in a way that will impact it. So it's become something greater than me, which I think it needs to be in order to really have an impact and to, you know, the long term, to be able to, you know, look back and feel like you left a legacy and you've done something greater than yourself.
That's great. Hey, well, so we'll end on a couple of other, just a personal note and then a fun question. But you and I share something else in common, that we're both adoptive dads. And I know you and Brandy have four children. If I recall, it's three daughters and a son. And is it your son that's adopted, or are more of your children adopted? Your son.
It's our son. Yeah.
So all five of mine are adopted, which you may know. And you know, he's your youngest, if I recall. So the decision for you guys to adopt. I'm just curious if you'd share a little bit of that for a couple minutes.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you asking. You know, first of all, I will say it's adopting Drew and going through that process and the impact he's had on our family and our life has been one of the most rewarding things we've had being blessed to be a part of. So, you know, for us, it was kind of a lifelong journey in some respects. So Brandy is a social worker by trade. And when we first were married and back at Mizzou with Ross Bjork and Mario Mocha and that whole crew back then, you know, we tried to get pregnant and just struggled for a while. And so Brandy being a social worker, we decided to go ahead to foster or to get licensed to foster to adopt. And right when we got licensed, so we went through the whole process, we got pregnant. And then, of course, we moved not too long after. We got pregnant again and moved, and life sort of started happening, right? So fast forward then to our time at when we were back at Kansas State. And we were, you know, we kind of felt like we were settled. We had grandparents there in town. Our daughters were all getting a little older. I think our youngest daughter at the time was 7. And we just felt called to do it again. It just felt right. It was something that we never really could let go of fully. It was always sort of in the back of our minds, and we talk about it periodically. And it really just became clear it was the right time to do it. So we went through the process, and as you know, much better than me doing it 5 times, the process can be challenging, right? But it is a journey of faith, and in the end, it's been so rewarding, not only for Brandy and I. And just, you know, the love of Drew and having him in our lives, but also for our girls. I mean, it's having him in their lives and sort of realizing that love and family can go beyond the biological connection and seeing that so firsthand is I think, incredibly rewarding. So it's been a great process. It was not just because I had to have a boy. That was going to be part of it. I will admit, we were going to get a boy if we're going to adopt at that point. But it was for a lot of reasons, and it's proven out to be, you know, one of the best things we've ever done. So
yeah, no doubt, man. Well, it's funny. I caught the phrase you said about, you know, seeming like life was happening and things were, you know, moving right along. And in our case, that's the place in time where we went from 2 to 5. You know, we adopted our last 3 as a biological sibling group. So
wow.
I completely resonate with your story. And we look forward to connecting more on that as well. So look, I can't talk about Memphis without talking about Memphis barbecue, right? So people from all over the country travel through Memphis. They're going to come there and play you from time to time. They're going to be a participant in the Liberty Bowl. And you know, there's a lot of chatter about Memphis barbecue and how it compares to other states' barbecue, et cetera, et cetera. What's the best barbecue in Memphis? And so I'm coming to you. I've got my own personal opinions, but I'm coming to you for the 411, the down low on, hey, look, you're there. I'm sure you're eating barbecue breakfast, lunch, and dinner. What do we need to know about barbecue in Memphis, and where is the place that you must go if you come to Memphis for barbecue.
Man, it you know, it, you've been in this chair, Mike, so you know you learn to be a little bit of a politician too in these types of questions. When I first got the job, you know, people knew about my Kansas or Kansas City background, right? So that was one of the first questions: what's better barbecue, Memphis barbecue or Kansas City barbecue? So I learned really quickly to, you know, kind of avoid those type of circumstances. And especially when it comes to barbecue in this city, we've got a lot of good partners, right? Rendezvous is really good to us. Central Barbecue is really good to us. Corky's is a good sponsor. So I'm not going to pick one. I'm not going to pick between my children here, but it is remarkably good. And I will admit that I think it's better than Kansas City. Now that I've been here, I feel like I can finally do that. I really, it's part of the culture of this place. I tell you, I live out in Germantown. I love Germantown Commissary. It's also a really, really good one. So there's a ton of them, and they're all a little bit unique, a little different, which I think is kind of what makes it fun. And they are different kind of experiences, but it is definitely part of the culture of this, the culture of this city. So it makes it fun.
You know, the thing that I think I became a fan of by coming there through the years was, dry rub ribs, right? That's something that Memphis becomes known for. And of course, I partook of that at the Rendezvous primarily. Mm-hmm. But iconic barbecue places in your town. In fact, for folks who are looking for something to do in the spring that's kind of neat, Memphis in May is actually a great festival down on the Mississippi River, where you can sample a lot of different kinds of barbecues. So that's my public service announcement for the travel segment of the podcast. How about that?
Yeah, absolutely. It is a fun city. That is what, when you come here, if you've not spent much time, the people here like to enjoy each other. They're very social. Food is a real thing, not just barbecue, but there's a lot of really good restaurants here. It's just a very engaged, active community. It makes it fun. So I have enjoyed it and would encourage others to do the same. So.
No doubt. Well, hey, look, Laird, it's been great to visit with you. The time has flown by. I appreciate you taking the time. Admire greatly who you are as a person and the work you've done professionally, and look forward to continuing to watch the success in your career. So thanks for joining us.
Happy to do it, Mike. Thanks for having me.
So you've been listening to From the Chair. Today's episode has been with Laird Veach from the University of Memphis. I'm Mike Hamilton. Please go to wherever you download your podcast and subscribe, or you can also listen and view the podcast on YouTube each week. We release on Wednesdays. We hope you will subscribe, and please send us your questions or your suggestions for guests as you get the time and the chance to do that. We'll see you next time.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.